Welcome back into the Golly Young Men podcast. This is episode 136. We, as always, very much appreciate you joining us, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. As always, we don't always say this, but we always want to encourage you to like, rate, review the podcast on YouTube. The likes really help on YouTube, the view count and all those things. So anything you can do to contribute, we really appreciate it. But Joe, let's go ahead and get into what we're talking about this week, which is, we've had episodes before kind of on reputation and the importance of that. What we're calling kind of the main gist of this episode is this idea of maintaining the moral high ground.
Yep.
Maintaining the moral high ground. There's so many things that encompass being a godly young man, but one of the most important ones is this idea of taking a stand. We want to be men who take stands on things. We don't want to be wishy-washy guys who, like, you go to ask them their thoughts on something. It's like, ah, I don't know, whatever everybody else thinks. It's like, that's not great.
Right.
We want to be men who take a stand. Take a stand in the home. Take a stand in the church, certainly, in the community, in work. Guys who take a stand, whether that be doctrinally, again, standing for truth, standing for the right thing to do, that can be very difficult to do if you are a hypocrite.
Right.
If you're somebody who does not have the moral high ground. Hypocrite and hypocrisy is kind of a buzzword in kind of Christendom, because typically people who leave the church will say, oh, I just left because the church is a bunch of hypocrites.
Bunch of hypocrites, yeah.
Typically, that's a pretty weak excuse. Typically, that's somebody who just wanted to leave the church and leave God anyway, and so they're just using that. At the same time, not much worse than a hypocrite. There is not much worse than somebody who says one thing and does another. And Joe, as we get into this idea of maintaining the moral high ground, that's really what we're going to talk about today, is this idea of, hey, if you're going to take a stand on things, if you're going to push all the things that we push in this podcast and try to live that out, you got to have, to some extent, the moral high ground. You can't have anybody look at you and say, well, I don't know why he's saying all that stuff, because look at all this other stuff he does in his life. That's what we're talking about today.
This is especially noticeable in families, you know, with the kids, where it's like dad presented as perfect, you know, from the pulpit or whatever it is. You know, at church, you'd go and shake all the hands, but man, at home, like, we're
he's
getting
a horrible
hit,
dad.
Or he's
yeah.
a horrible dad, or he's sleeping around, or whatever it may be. You see this. I mean, that's not just a you know, joke or kind of a occasionally happens. I see this actually a lot in therapy. I've seen this where the guy, maybe his wife is very unruly, maybe he should be saying something. Everybody kind of knows that she's somewhat of an issue, but he can't say anything because he knows he's got some porn issue. Well, who is he to say? Like, if she can just easily trot that out and go, well, you look at porn, so what difference does it make? And he knows this, and so therefore he
stays
quiet.
It's almost like a
quiet
trump card that he
Correct.
Can't beat. Yeah.
And this is what we mean by the moral high ground is, are you giving other people the trump card? Are you giving them the, well, you do this? Doesn't mean you have to be perfect. Everybody's going to have something that they struggle with from time to time. We're human. That's very normal. What we're talking about is an undealt with sin or an undealt with struggle that you're just giving up the moral high ground. People can't trust you. They can't rely on you. You're not providing safety for them in various ways. And so what we want to look at with this is, you know, there's areas to be aware of, but also what we can do to help make sure you maintain the moral high ground.
Just briefly, Joe, you got on here, like, are you willing to live by the standards you call everyone else to live by? An example of that would be, like, if, you know, where I have this podcast and me and Rachel are in divorce court right now.
Right.
Like, you know, right. Hopefully you guys will be listening to that going, well, his opinion just kind of went down in, as far as my perspective goes. And I would hope it does. I'd hope if found out that my wife and I were in divorce court, you wouldn't listen to me quite as strongly. This stuff really matters. I think about the, just briefly, Joe, and then you can get us into these areas, which I appreciate Joe once again put this outline together. I think about one of the first qualifications listed for elders. You got to desire the position, but then secondly, or I guess kind of the, other than that, the first big one, got to be blameless, above
right.
reproach.
Above reproach.
Nobody's going to be able to say when this person's name gets brought up to be an elder, whoa, that guy has this going on in his life. Yeah. That guy cheats on his taxes. That guy's a jerk to people at work. That guy flirts with every woman he can find. That's not maintaining the moral high ground. For this qualification of an elder, nobody can say anything like that about him. He's blameless. He's above reproach. Nobody would have anything against him as far as that goes. That's kind of what we're talking about here with this idea of, are you willing to live by the standard that you call everyone else to?
Yeah. So we're going to look at four ways, maybe five. Look, there's a ton of ways. This is all across the board, but these are ways that I specifically see where guys really fall short and they lose the moral high ground, especially in the home, but this also happens in the church, happens
so
in their place of work.
So areas to be careful and beware of.
Yes, areas to beware of. Number one is lust, of course. This is going to be the very first and foremost one that as godly young men, we have to pay attention to, because this does happen in the mind. And so often it's about your relationship with you. It's easy to think like, oh, it's just kind of my little thing. This is about you looking yourself in the mirror and knowing, am I a man of God? Am I a man who's walking worthy of the calling with which we've been called, as Paul talks about? Am I doing the things that I ought to be doing as a man? And if you have some secret porn addiction, whether your wife knows about it or not, you know, and that enough is will shut you down from saying anything, because who are you? You've given up the moral high ground. I see this with couples where there's been infidelity. How in the world can you cheat on your wife and then go think that you can call her to a high standard, lead her spiritually, you know, get in the word with her, pray for her? You've given up the moral high ground, so who are you to then go and try to be Mr. Spiritual Head when you have so clearly used your position of power and thrown it down the drain, basically?
I think about just how pivotal the role of a husband and father is in the home. Of course, we've had dozens of episodes about that. And just how fast that can unravel if you're somebody who consistently gives into lust. Maybe it's not even a full-blown addiction, but maybe it's something that you kind of sneak back to every now and then. And maybe you don't ever go to a pornographic website, but man, maybe every time somebody walks by, you're kind of, you know, taking the second and third and fourth glance, right. Letting your thoughts kind of run wild. Maybe you're following certain people on social media that you really shouldn't be following, but you don't look at porn. Listen, that can absolutely unravel your, once again, moral high ground to where you are giving into that constantly, constantly, constantly. Man, it's just, it doesn't, when you're trying to lead your home as a husband and a father, this is something that can, once again, just completely undermine it, because you have no self-discipline, no self-control. Yep. And that's the other thing, is they might not know that you're taking the second and third, your wife or your kids or whoever might not know that you're taking that second and third glance, or, you know, lingering on that screen a little bit too long. You know, and God knows, and that's really enough to make it to where you don't even take yourself quite as seriously, because you know you have a problem with that.
And it destroys your boldness to say anything that you need to do, especially in the home, but in the workplace, wherever it may be. So don't live in shame. That's what lust does, is it puts you in shame and it causes you to shrink back, and we're to be bold men of God who go forward. That's going to be the very first one. We'll get us into the second one.
Second one is greed. Greed. I mean, lust is probably the number one issue that guys can struggle with. Greed might be number two. Greed / covetousness, kind of wanting power, certainly wanting wealth, materialism. Probably the second thing, biggest thing that guys can struggle with, just because, listen, we've had episodes before about it's good to make money. It's okay to want to make money. It's okay to look at something and say, man, I really want that. I want to be able to build that house. I really want to be able to go on that vacation. You know, as long as it doesn't consume your thoughts and you're, you know, going to go to whatever means you can to you know, attain it or obtain it. As long as you're not doing that. However, you know, you need to make sure that greed is not something that is encapsulating your heart and your thoughts. Gambling is really big right now. You know, we're not going to have this gambling a sin debate, but one thing about gambling is it can suck you in. Why? Because you're like the allure of just got to hit it big. Yep. Just got to hit it big on you know, whatever it is that, you know, that you might gamble on, sports or horse racing or whatever it is, going to casinos. Be very wary of greed, and not even just greed for money, Joe. You might have been able to get in, you're going to get into this, but as I said a second ago, greed for power, greed for status, right? Yep. I want to drive this certain car so the people will look at me and know that I have a certain status, or this certain position in life, or position at my job. Man, greed can consume people, or specifically guys, because it takes your focus, not just even off of God, but off of what's most important, discipling your kids, having a healthy marriage, of course, a walk with God. Like, greed can distract you from all of those things, and that's what makes it so dangerous.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, we can talk about giving to others. We can talk about being generous. We can talk about having the right heart of giving and things like that. But if our kids are seeing that all we do is think about the almighty dollar, that's all we talk about, that's what, you know, mom and I fight about, whatever it may be. If that's the case, man, what message are we sending? And if it's, once again, a hypocrisy of I'm saying one thing and doing something different, I'm saying that family time is important, but I always prioritize work. I always prioritize the money making. I always take on that second, third job when I don't really need it, but all I do is, you know, I want the money, want the money, want the money. We can convince ourselves, and I've been here before, I can convince myself that the money is what provides for the lifestyle. But in reality, okay, do the kids really need the newest XYZ, or do we really need the money to travel, or maybe they just need dad here? And so if that's the case, you lose, and you say, man, how do you lose the moral high ground in this? Your kids will begin to tune you out when they see the separation there. They see that you're saying one thing and doing something different. You're saying that you know, we give to God on Sunday, but the rest of the week, either you don't give to anybody, or you have zero heart of compassion, zero heart to give. Or you're saying that, well, money's not, you know, it's the almighty dollar. Like, we don't want to get into that, and the love of money is root of all sorts of evil. And yet, we never see dad. All he does is work. That's where they start to see this. And I do believe you lose the moral high ground, because kids start to realize, man, dad loves money more than us. And I think once that's the case and your priorities are mixed up, they will begin to tune you out.
Yeah, there was an episode we did early on, I think first year of the Gallium podcast, where we both did, but I think I'm the one that kind of initiated the conversation of like, listen, if you're working more than 60 hours a week, it's too much. You just shouldn't work that much. And it was kind of one of those like, well, who are you to say, you know, you don't know my situation. It is just kind of a zero sum game of your time of like, you only have a certain amount of time
yep.
that you can spend, you know, a certain amount of hours to allot to different things. And the more hours you allot to pursuing, you know, the extra dollar or, you know, work or career or side hustle this or getting your education, furthering your education here, like all things that aren't wrong in of themselves. It's just the point, you know, the fact of life that the more hours you allot to that, or it's less hours you can allot to your kids. And this is an area of growth, I would say, definitely for me, is, you know, realizing, yes, there's a base level right now of hours that I have to spend every week allotting to work. And it ain't 40 right now for me. It would be nice if it was. It's just not. But the thing about it is I have the ability to go up as high and high as I want as far as hours. Again, I can do this side hustle, that side hustle. I can work more at my job or whatever. The higher that goes, the less amount of hours I can devote to my kids. And that is a self-discipline thing of deciding, yeah, it might be nice to have the extra couple hundred or thousand dollars or whatever this month. Do we really need it? If no, let me make sure I'm fully discipling my kids. And so that's where I came up with that 60-hour a week thing. Again, that's very arbitrary. I totally understand. Sure. But it is a zero-sum game.
A big part of having the moral high ground is being there to enforce it.
Yeah.
You know, and to show that you know what you're talking about, you have a leadership and you have direction for the family, and you'll lose it if all you ever do is work and they never see dad. It's really tough to maintain a moral high ground when you're not there for it. Number three is anger, or the next is anger, area to be aware of. How in the world can you talk to your wife about her gossip struggle or about her you know, small lying or whatever it may be, any other sin, when you're screaming at her all the time? Right? You're too busy screaming at her. You're too busy getting up in arms. And every single time that you guys go to talk about anything, it just ends in explosion.
Your voice raises.
Right. The voice is raised and the kids are kind of scared. And like, you will lose the moral high ground in your home like that. The moment that the kid goes to his room scared of dad. The moment that, and sure, there's fear. I get it. My kids don't always like to see me come down the hall either because they'll see with the paddle or whatever it is.
But it's
like,
not because you're losing your cool.
Correct.
That's the difference.
It's not out of anger, and it's not like, oh man, you know, you need to hide from dad's anger. No, I can get angry, no doubt, but it's in control. And the moment that they think you're out of control, because that's really what happens. When you fly off the handle, it lets everyone, including you, know you are not in control of yourself. And if dad's not in control of dad, who is? Yep. You know, who's in control of this whole thing? Who's driving the ship? So then mom's got to step in, or the kids don't feel safe. And so you are fundamentally taking away, the same way the lust may take away safety and security from your wife, this will take away safety and security from your family, where they can't trust dad because he's a loose cannon. Yeah. He just fly off the handle at any point. You'll lose the moral high ground faster than almost anything. I mean, this could almost be above lust in terms of where guys go with it.
It's fine. I'm not gonna lie. Like I have sympathy and I have a lot of patience for guys that might struggle with lust or even greed. Again, these are kind of tough things. I don't have a lot of patience for this one. This anger problem that guys have of just flying off the handle, loose cannon, is a great, you know, very short fuse. You start throwing things.
Very unstable.
Raising your voice, start cussing. Like, I'm sorry, I have zero patience for that, because to me, this is one of the easiest things in the world to get a lid on. To take 5 minutes, go walk outside, whatever you got to do. Like, oh, it's genetic, I have an anger problem. No, it's just you have a self-control problem. You can't control yourself. Like, I don't mean to be flippant about it, but this is one of those things that is just not that hard to not scream at your kids. It's just not that hard to not cuss at your wife. It's just not that hard to not throw things or punch walls or, you know, obviously those might be dramatic examples, but this stuff really happens because guys can't control their anger. Because, and as Joe said very beautifully, you lose your moral high ground in your home instantly. Not to mention, one moment, you know, a lapse of judgment, punch somebody at work, or again, you say
scream at somebody in the church halls.
Yeah, say a yell at somebody or cuss at somebody at church. Like, man, that's all it takes for your reputation, your moral high ground to go up in smoke, to go up in flames. And so, man, this one, again, not to be flippant about it, it's just not that hard to control yourself in anger. Doesn't mean you can't get angry. Doesn't mean you might not need to go drive around and blow off some steam, walk around, you know, go run laps around your house, like go work out, whatever. Anger is not bad, but man, when you can't keep a lid on it and you just let yourself, as Joe said, completely fly off the handle, you'll lose your moral high ground really quick.
If you find that you're rather combustible when it comes to it, we've talked about this in the podcast before, get therapy. You know, most of the time, it's because I use the water bottle illustration, right? It's the small things that, man, I just get angry at everything. That means you are operating with very little room. this much is unprocessed. Most of what's in the water bottle is unprocessed anger that you need to process through. Get yourself some therapy, take up journaling, take up equine therapy, I don't care, whatever it is, get the anger down and start confronting all of the demons from the past. You'll find that the anger definitely goes down, and the little things that happen, it's a blip on the radar. It goes up and down, but it's all within the bottle. Anything that's spilling out of the bottle, especially if you have a short fuse, tells me you got way too much anger you're carrying around.
Well, you as the husband, we've made this point before, you as the husband and father should be the most emotionally stable one in the house.
You have to be.
Because your wife and your kids need to, when they're maybe having their rough stretches of emotional instability and frustration and maybe anger or fear or whatever, they need to be able to look to you and say, he's our rock. He's got us. Things might be going, you know, things might be going awry, might not be going well. Dad, my husband, my dad, he is going to be emotionally supportive because he is able to handle it. If you can't, and they're looking around like, well, I guess we've got to be the emotionally stable ones because dad certainly can't be, you've got bigger fish to fry. Like, that's a huge problem.
So, yeah, the moral high ground is given up in that moment, and they won't look at you. They won't trust you. The same, and I love that you brought in the other points. Yeah, make sure that, I mean, imagine going to an elder and having the elder scream at you. Like, you're never going to that guy again. We got to be in control of ourselves, and it really does come down to control. Who's in control here? If you're in control of your emotions, that's going to go well for you. The next one we have is actually a series, and you know, we already talked about gambling. It's vices.
Yeah.
Vices.
Sorry, I jumped the gun on vices a bit.
No, you're all good. You're all good. Gambling, of course, is on the vices. Another one, this goes without saying, don't ever consume alcohol. I'm sorry. You just don't do it.
It's just not smart.
It's not smart in the least. It is a it leads to bad things 9 times out of 10, probably 10 times out of 10. Like, alcohol, especially if you find yourself drinking, you're getting a little tipsy, whatever. Well, then you get drunk. Doesn't matter. What does that tell you? I'm not in control of my faculties. And can my wife, and you go, well, what's the big deal? Can your wife and other people trust you when you're drinking? Are you at your best when you're drinking? No, I don't think anybody can say they're at their best. Now, it may calm you down in a tense situation. It may cause you to relax after a tough day. It may cause you shouldn't need an external substance for anything like that.
Yeah.
But if you're drinking, that also causes you to lose the moral high ground, because all it takes is one time of you going a little too far or whatever it is, and your wife and kids are never going to look at you the same.
Yep.
You go, well, that's not fair. It only happened once. How many lies do you have to tell before it casts all 99 truths into, you know, you tell one in 100 truths or 99 truths are all cast into doubt. Why? Well, because you told one lie. It works the same exact way here.
Well, five bad seconds can obliterate your moral high ground. You know, the perfect example of this is Coldplay concert. The CEO,
man.
You know, I probably should have mentioned this with the lust point, but I'll bring it in here just because it's like, for those of you who don't know, it was probably the biggest social media story this year. The CEO of a company called Astronomer was having an affair with his HR rep, and they got put on the Jumbotron at a Coldplay concert for the Kiss Cam. And if you look it up, you'll see within about 0.2 seconds, they realize they're up there, and they dip out of the frame. Well, of course, that drew everybody's eyes, so they looked the guy up. They were having an affair. Long story short, it was a big story. That was what were they on the screen for? 5 seconds?
Yep.
That's all it took. Their lives are, you know, probably not ruined forever, but kind of going up in flames now. And so, obviously, to rope it back into the alcohol point, you know, you drink too much and then you drive, or listen to somebody tell a story about how their son got hit by a car in downtown Nashville walking out of the club drinking, miraculously was not hurt, but it's like, huh, what were you doing? I was drinking at 2 a.m. out in the club. You know, you've got on here vaping and smoking, just really terrible ideas. Gambling, we've already kind of talked about. Immaturity is one that I added, like just doing stupid stuff, that maybe stuff that's not like sinful or whatever, but you're just being an idiot. You know, we've talked about, you know, guys that jump off cruise ships before, you know, all kind of stuff that it could be. This stuff can just ruin your reputation, ruin your moral high ground, because people, the immaturity one especially, because people don't take you seriously. I'm sorry, if you're walking around carrying a vape, I just don't take you quite as seriously.
Right.
If you're somebody who, you know, drinks and gets tipsy, and like, I'm just not going to take you as seriously, and so your moral high ground is, maybe that's just my perspective, but it's going to go up in flames for me.
Yeah, I very much agree. It's the way tattoos used to be. Man, if you're sporting a sleeve, you know, going into a job interview.
Full
like,
neck tattoo.
Yeah, full neck or whatever, especially face tattoos. There are just some things that's like, people are going to look at you differently. And if that's your wife looking at you differently, man, that's really not good. So you have to think about those things. The immaturity, oh man, I just saw this news article today, this morning. Two guys, this is horrible actually. Two guys decided that they would shoot one another with Kevlar helmets on. One went through and killed the guy, and the guy's on trial for murder. Because they thought they were, you know, oh, cool.
What
wouldn't it be cool if we just shot each other in the head, but we had Kevlar on? and one went through and killed the guy. Like, this is the stupidity you can get up to. Horrible. I mean, these are things like that just can't happen. But it does. And so, yeah, that's a bit of an extreme example when you're talking about immaturity doing stupid stuff.
I mean, yeah, it fits right in.
You get roped in with the wrong people asking the wrong thing. Like, who's the one that suggested that? Somebody's got to put the brakes on these things. And you got to be able to create that safety for your wife to know and for your kids to know and for other people, your job to know. People at church, like, he is reliable. We can count on him to make the wise, sober-minded, good decision when it counts.
Well, it may not even be that extreme of an example, but you look at somebody who you think, man, strong moral figure. Are they doing dumb stuff like that?
Right.
Of course not. Of course right? not. They're generally not. So, Joe, you put this last one on kind of spur of the moment.
I did. So I have some
spirituality.
Yeah, low spirituality. I should have put low on there. Low spirituality.
Share what kind of thoughts you had there.
You will lose the moral high ground if the only person that ever opens their Bible or reads in the home, reads any spiritual book, prays, is your wife.
Mm.
You will lose the moral high ground very quickly. If your wife has to put the book on the nightstand to get you to read anything of spirituality, you can tell me every political thing and every conspiracy theory, and you can tell me everything that happens on X, everything that's going down in the culture, but you can't tell me what John 3:16 says, or you can't tell me, you know, what spiritual thing is taking place at your church. You have a problem.
Well,
if your wife or others are seeing that, where you are Mr. plugged into the culture, but you are not plugged into spirituality, you will lose the moral high ground very quickly, because what she will learn is, I can't trust him. I can't trust him. When it comes down to it, I cannot trust that he's actually going to understand the spiritual needs of this home, and the kids are going to realize very quickly he is all smoke. When he shows up to church, he acts like he knows a ton, but at home, we don't ever open the Bible. We don't ever have family worship time. We don't ever do anything else. You will lose the moral high ground.
Let me add some to this, and this is not trying to be harsh or disparage people, but this is an indicator. If you as a grown man, if your prayers sound like an 11-year-old's prayers, that might be an indicator. You know, thank you for this day, food, blessings, be with the sick, help the military. Like, I'm sorry, that's an 11-year-old prayer. That's an indicator. If you know the plan of salvation and that's it, can't, you know, you're in a kind of a spiritual conversation, maybe a little bit deeper than shallow level, and you're like, man, I'm out. I don't know any. Like, that's an indicator that you just don't have the. And again, everybody's at different walks in their faith. But I'm sorry, if you're over 40 years old as a leader of your home and you don't know much more than the plan of salvation, your Bible knowledge is not much deeper than, you know, again, you know, John 3:16, you know, Acts 2:38, and that's about it. That's just an indicator of low spirituality. So, yeah, go ahead.
For the right woman, if you can engage in the online discussions, penal substitutionary atonement's coming up. If you can adequately engage in those discussions, I'll tell you what, that is the biggest turn on, in my opinion, for a female. And you could talk to women like, for the right woman, now the woman of the world, the Jezebel, no, probably not. For the young woman at the church that is...
You're not out of your depth.
You're not out of your depth. I'll tell you what, that goes a really, really long way. I've seen it with your wife, my wife, like... Because I do like to engage. Doesn't mean I have all the right answers, but I like to engage in those discussions, and I'd like to study, even if I have no idea what's going on. I'd love to study. Let's find out more about this. And so you go and you research some things or whatever it may be. Man, that lets them know I'm in good hands. Yeah. You know, Allstate, right? Lets them know that you are taking a spiritual lead, and if she has a question about what takes place in class, let them ask their husbands at home. I don't know. I don't know, but let me tell you about what Trump did. Uh-uh. No. If she's going to come to you, as the Bible says, to ask these questions, man,
you better be studied
up.
You better be studied up
on these things, or be willing to study. I mean, you have to know everything. Be willing to study. So, yes, low spirituality, in my opinion, will destroy your moral authority at home.
That's a great addition. So, finally, last few things that we've got on here. Those were the five areas, just briefly: lust, greed, anger, vices, and spirituality. Areas to beware of, areas to watch out for. The last section of this that we want to talk about is, how do you maintain the moral high ground? You know, let's say you don't have any of those issues that we just went over right now. You don't really struggle with them, at least to a large extent. And so you feel like you have the moral high ground. That's great. Joe, how do we maintain that? Where would you start?
Yeah, be willing to admit where you're wrong.
Yeah.
We talk about hypocrisy being the killer, right? Like, if you can adequately say, this is where I struggle, and, you know, guys, I'm not the best at this. I'm really working on this. For your kids to see areas of struggle, one of the biggest problems I have with boomers... Yes, I will call out boomers. Anybody watching, sorry, I guess.
They deserve it in many cases.
And they deserve it in many cases, is a complete inability to admit where they're wrong.
You got to tell the Lily Phillips story real fast.
Oh, my goodness. I sent this to Jack and Will this last week.
This is mind-blowing.
Oh, my goodness.
I did finally watch that video,
Did you? Yeah. So Lily Phillips, who is on OnlyFans.
Don't look her up.
Don't look her up if you don't know who she is. But this is somebody who did a...
She's one of the most prominent OnlyFans...
creators.
That's the word. Yes.
And her big stunt is to sleep with multiple men in a day, and by multiple, like hundreds. Yeah. Absolutely disgusting. Please don't go look it up. And so I hesitate to even share the name.
But her name is very well known for that reason.
Correct. So they did I was watching an interview, and the interviewer and her, Lily, were there, and they were doing like a Zoom call with her parents, talking to her parents about what do they think. And, well, we didn't have any problem with the OnlyFans, and we know she's going to make, you know, she's going to make her living that way or whatever it is. But we got really concerned about some of the dangerous stunts, some of the dangerous things, the extreme stuff. So it comes back around, and they said, how did it, we asked ourselves, did we do anything wrong as parents? Did we go anywhere wrong as parents? And no, we don't
think
we did.
They both look at each other and they go, no, I don't think so.
I don't know where we would have gone wrong. Like, your daughter's sleeping with hundreds of men.
And is famous for it.
And is famous for it.
You didn't do anything wrong.
She is what would be known as, I don't even know if we can say it on the podcast, but a hoe with an R on the end. Like, that's exactly what she is. And yet the parents
and you didn't do anything wrong.
Complete inability to see that they did anything wrong.
Yeah.
Just blows your mind. I can't believe that they would actually be able to sit there and say we were perfect parents, that their daughter chose OnlyFans. This is what we're dealing with. And so, sorry, that's a brief aside to say, be willing to admit when you're wrong. Willing to admit where you're wrong. Well, you know, sometimes I sin. Yeah, thanks. We all know that. Where do you sin? Guys, I really struggle with my anger, and I'm working on my anger. And you know what? Lust can be really difficult to own up to. You got to own up to it with your wife. Yeah. There's a time and place, I think, to even own up to it with your kids. Maybe not immediately, but I think that's something that you need to work on. Be willing to admit where you're wrong, I think, in my opinion, is the number one way to maintain the moral high ground, because it's going to show dad doesn't think he's perfect, but he is working on it.
Yeah, and it defeats the, or kind of contradicts the hypocrisy accusation. Like, no, right. I will admit when I'm wrong and where I'm wrong. The next two I'm going to group together that you got on here, Joe, firstly, which is the second point, pray for God to reveal your sins to you. This is really important, you know, for, again, let's say you don't struggle with the big things. Some of those little things can add up. And so praying to God to reveal those sins and to help you, you know, kind of get out of the path of those sins. But then also ask your wife, siblings, parents, mentors, etc., to help you see areas of improvement. This is one of the toughest things for guys to do, because guys think they have it all figured out.
Right.
Asking for help or asking other people's advice is kind of like, man, that would make me inferior to them. Man, get rid of that mindset, especially when it comes to mentors and parents and people who are older and have more experience than you, and more than likely, maybe not always, are wiser than you. Man, ask, you know, how can I improve in this area? What are some things that you think I could do differently? Especially as you enter into different phases of life within your marriage, when you're parenting. Like, listen, everybody might not always have great advice, but that's something you can look toward, these older examples of people. I think you having the wife on here is an interesting one, of like, ask your wife, hey, how can I be a better husband? What are things that I can do to make our marriage better, to really work on our marriage? The point with all this is you are open to constructive criticism almost.
Right.
Like, you are open to correction. You are not somebody who's like, anytime somebody brings up anything, defenses go up, and you're like, well, how dare you? Like, that's not a great guy to be.
Well, and there's this concept of like, well, if I ask my wife that, then that's going to show weakness, and I can't show weakness. Come on now. There's a difference between, you know, like blubbering to your wife and constantly crying to your wife about whatever it may be versus, hey, what areas do you think I need to step up in, or what areas do you think I need to work on most in our marriage, as a parent, as a man, whatever it is? I really do want to make sure that I'm on the right track, and she's around you more than anybody, so ask. That's not weakness. I think that shows a kindness to include her in your growth process. Another thing we have on here, study on how to lead or improve or grow, and let your wife and kids see the study. So I have, I'm always reading, and I'm sure for you, always reading a book about some way to try to improve in something. And so right now I'm reading Raising a Modern Day Knight. And it's another on raising boys up and what that looks like and how you need her. And I talk with my wife about these things, and you know, I try to engage with my kids, and I'm working on some things that are in the book. And so study on how to do these things. You're not going to know everything, but it's really important, I think, to take the time and realize I don't know everything, so I'm going to go find the answers. Yeah. And if your wife and kids see, and people at work and people at church, they see that you're the guy that will go find the answers, that helps you maintain that moral high ground, because they see he may not be perfect, but man, he's really trying. He's pushing. And it's not performative trying, like I'm just reading the book and happen to put it right where she can see that I'm reading this book. It's like, no, I'm just trying to be about it. I'm reading it and trying to apply and talking to my wife about some of these principles and concepts. I think that helps them see that yeah, dad's working on it.
Yeah, that's really good. The next one we have is live an open life where you're the same at home. You're the same at home as you are in the world or in church. This is an underrated one. I think this is so important that you, man, you are not somebody that you are somebody who is the same everywhere. You use the same language, good positive, good language. You're kind to everybody. You're generally a positive, optimistic person. You're godly. You're righteous. Like, if that's only your persona at church, that's a problem. But man, if you're somebody who, yeah, I'm the same guy whether or not I'm leading the closing prayer at church, or whether I'm working the night shift at my job, or whether I'm out to eat at a restaurant, that is such an important. We need to put this down to have an episode on this. I don't know if there's enough content there, but like being the same type of person everywhere in life.
Yeah, true and true.
I'm really glad this one really speaks to me, or I should say, really resonates with me, just because if you're somebody who, again, at church you're like Mr. Spiritual, and then at work you're, you know.
Telling dirty jokes
yeah. Exactly, using language that you shouldn't, just being kind of a jerk to people, treating the waitress rude, like that is just, you're not going to have the moral high ground that way. And so live an open life where you are the same type of person. So the big point my dad made when he was preaching, and I think something he did a good job of, is he pretty well was the same guy. I mean, yeah, he had a bit of a preacher voice, and you know, he's a very good speaker, and so that came out. But man, he was also the same type of guy when you're sitting across the dinner table from him. And so that's something I've always tried to take home with me and do the same thing. I'm really glad you put that. That's a really important one.
Authenticity goes a very that's long a good way word. Yeah. In maintaining the moral high ground. I should put it down as just the word that came to mind right now. Yeah. Is being authentic with people and maintaining that level of, man, what you see is what you get.
Yep.
And people, that will go a very long way with everybody in your life, especially your wife and kids. And
that is in high demand in 2025, people who are authentic.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I have on here, just to wrap up, like if you give up the moral high ground, regaining it can be incredibly, incredibly difficult. So start with it, keep it as best as you can.
Don't toy with it.
Yeah. Do not toy with it. This is a gift from God, and this is why God has called us as men to lead the family, is we do need to have the moral high ground. Doesn't mean that your wife isn't going to be great as well, or that sometimes you're going to struggle in sin or whatever it is. But when you so willingly give it up, I mean, it's like Esau giving up his birthright. Like there is something that regaining this is insanely difficult. You got to make amends, take ownership of your mistakes, and work and fight like crazy to get it back, because I've seen this and it can be done. But I'm telling you, as somebody who works in this and who works with sex addicts for a living, getting this back is a years-long process. A years-long process of virtually no mistakes, where you are not creating any issue, because the moment that you create one issue again after such big issues, man, it sets you back to square one. So it's really difficult. So if you can keep and maintain it, you know, from the very beginning, it's worth its weight in gold.
And then the other thing we've got on here on the kind of the flip side of that, if you have given up the moral high ground, mistakes, giving into lust, letting your anger go too far, whatever it may be, make amends by owning your mistakes and work hard to regain people's trust. It's a process. It's similar to, just because that's where my mind is, you know, right now. It's similar to the person who doesn't really start saving for retirement until 42 years old. You can still get there, but you got some work in front of you. It's not going to be easy sledding. Very, very similarly, if you've got a situation in your life where you have yielded, given up the moral high ground, you can still gain it back, but you've got to kind of put your head down and go to work, essentially. You've got to just grind it out, really work hard to gain people's trust, do all these things that we're talking about. So, yeah, those are kind of my concluding thoughts. I would strongly encourage all godly young men, man, do what you can to keep and maintain this moral high ground. Don't do dumb stuff. Don't be the high-powered spiritual leader in the church who has a sex scandal, or who is a different person at work, or whatever it may be. Yeah, those are my concluding thoughts there.
Those are great concluding thoughts. This is, it's just near and dear to my heart, because I work in this a lot, and I see this a lot, and man, God forbid any of us, anybody watching that us, we have a scandal that, you know, comes out that just rocks everybody, and what, that happened? We want to make sure we are who we say we are, to the best of our ability, especially at home. We want our wife and kids to feel secure and confident in our spiritual leadership and where we're going, and so that's really what this is about. Without any other thoughts, though, this has been episode 136 of the Godly Amen Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.